Welcome to Torah from JTS, a weekly commentary from the Jewish Theological Seminary. This week's commentary for Matot Maaseh was written by Dr. Benjamin D. Summer, Professor of Bible and Ancient Semitic Languages at JTS. Boundaries on the Move. Every week we read a parasha from the Torah during our Shabbat morning service, and then at the beginning of the next parasha during our Shabbat afternoon service. The result of reading from two parashot on a single day can be surprising. This week, as we read the first from Maaseh, the last parasha of Numbers, and then from Devarim, the first from Deuteronomy, we can hear an ancient debate about an issue that remains deeply contested, where to draw the line. Parashat Maaseh contains what we might call a map in prose. This map describes the extent of the promised land that the Israelites will soon enter. The boundaries are defined as follows. The southern boundary runs through the Negev Desert, about 30 to 45 miles south of Beersheba, so that the northern part of the Negev is within the promised land. Much of the western boundary consists of the Mediterranean Sea. Moving southward, the western boundary continues along the riverbed called the River of Egypt, Nachal Mitzrayim, Wadi El Arish today, which runs west of the Gaza Strip. The northern boundary runs through current-day Lebanon, probably starting slightly south of Beirut and extending east. The eastern boundary's northern flank is somewhere to the east of Damascus, it then moves westward to Lake Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee, and continues south along the Jordan River and the Dead Sea. But next week's parasha provides a different description of the Promised Land's borders, also found in more detail in Genesis. According to the map those passages share, the Promised Land is considerably larger. The western boundary is still the Mediterranean and the River of Egypt. The northern boundary is not clarified with great specificity, but it seems to extend up to Asia Minor, today's Turkey. The eastern boundary is the Euphrates River in northeastern Syria. The southern boundary is not spelled out, but it may extend all the way to the Gulf of Eilat. The most important difference between the two maps involves Transjordan, which was inhabited in ancient times by 2.5 Israelite tribes, Reuben, Gad, and part of Manasseh. Several passages elsewhere in the Bible agree with one or the other map. Joshua 13, 14, and 22 describe how each of the 12 tribes received their own territory under the supervision of Joshua. These chapters assume the map from this week's reading in Numbers, treating the Israelite tribes in Transjordan as residing outside of Israel's territory. But other passages agree with Deuteronomy 1 and Genesis 15, regarding the Transjordan's inhabitants as within the Promised Land. How can we account for the presence of these two maps in the Torah? Modern biblical scholars, such as me, believe that the Torah was formed when scribes combined several documents that had been written by groups of sages, priests, and prophets from ancient Israel. All of them were mediating and interpreting messages from God and traditions they received from their ancestors. The more limited map of the Promised Land from this week's parasha stems from the priestly school of ancient Israel, whom we call P authors. The other map appears in Deuteronomy, which was written by Levites, and in sections of Genesis and Exodus written by scribes called the J and E authors. The differing opinions regarding borders lead each school of thought to view certain events differently from the other. Where did God change Jacob's name to Israel? J and P both remember this important event. In J, this event happened at Penuel in Transjordan. But that version of the story is problematic for the priestly authors because in their view, Penuel is located outside the Promised Land, and one would assume this momentous event took place inside the land. In a P passage, God bestows the name Israel on Jacob and his progeny at Bethel on the west side of the Jordan River. Similarly, in this week's Torah reading, when P tells us about the tribes of Reuben and Gad settling in Transjordan, they make it clear that their settlement there is a concession. God permits them to live there only if they help conquer the Promised Land too. The key word repeated in verses 20, 23, 29, and 30 is im, if. When Deuteronomy tells us about this same event at the end of next week's parasha, the tribe's settlement there is neither conditional nor a concession. The land east of the Jordan is God's gift to those tribes. The key verb is natati, I have given you. The men from these tribes still fight in the Israelite army, but their receipt of the land in Transjordan is not contingent on their doing so. We can notice a consistent machloket, or debate, in the Torah about the extent of the Promised Land. the Torah provides two conflicting maps of the land, along with two sets of texts that consistently view events through the lens provided by the one map or the other. What do we learn from all this? First of all, it's significant that the debate occurs at all. The boundaries of the land of Israel, according to the Bible, are not set in stone. There is more than one biblical view of its correct or ideal boundaries. Similar flexibility regarding the boundaries shows up in the Book of Kings. After Hiram the king of Tyre provides lumber and gold with which Solomon had the temple built, Solomon transferred 20 towns in the Galilee to King Hiram to pay for these materials. This story gives rise to another disagreement, however. Later biblical historians who wrote the Book of Chronicles regarded the idea that the king of Israel could give up parts of the Promised Land in the conduct of international diplomacy as problematic, and so they altered the story so that Hiram granted the towns to Solomon. However, the later version does not quite explain why Hiram would pay Solomon in return for goods that Hiram sent to Solomon. The variety of views grows even larger in rabbinic literature. The Mishnah asks what areas are covered by the laws of Shemitah, the command to let farmland lie fallow every seventh year. It rules that the land of Israel, within which the land must lie fallow, does not correspond to either biblical map. Instead, these laws are fully in effect only in the limited area settled by the Jews who returned from the Babylonian exile. In areas that had been settled by the Israelites centuries earlier in the time of Joshua, the laws of Shemitah are partially in effect. And what of areas of the land, according to either biblical map, that were not settled by Israelites at all, that is, Syria and Lebanon? The Mishnah rules that the laws of Shemitah are not in effect there at all. For the sages of the Mishnah, political realities play a role in defining the extent of the land for halachic purposes. The Mishnah assumes that the boundaries change over time. But the whole debate is premised on a bedrock assumption. Although the boundaries can shift, there are boundaries. Whatever their disagreements over details, all the biblical authors agree that there is such a thing as the Promised Land, and it's located on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean Sea. Some Jews in modern times, for example in Germany in the 19th century, wanted to eliminate notions of Promised Land and sacred space from Judaism. For the varied authors of the Torah, such a purging is just not possible. Like it or not, land matters to Judaism. There's flexibility regarding where and how it matters, but not on the question of whether it matters at all. The lesson goes beyond geography. The same basic idea that comes out of comparing this week's Torah reading with next week's applies more broadly in Judaism. There are boundaries. We can debate where they should be located. Sometimes they move. But the debate starts in the acknowledgement that boundaries are important to us as Jews. This lesson is one that has particular import for conservative Jews. The project of our movement is to bring Torah and its observance into the modern world. As we do so, it's crucial to remember that in Masa'enu, in our journeys, we're not free as Jews to go anywhere at all. This is something Jews on the right and the left both need to accept. Jews on the right need to realize that boundaries can be flexible, and the Bible is okay with that. Jews on the left need to realize there are boundaries, so that not every change we want to make is acceptable. One might have thought that a list of geographic place names, a map in prose, might be a little, well, boring, or even irrelevant. But a careful look at what seems boring in this week's Torah reading turns out to be instructive. In the ways they differ, and in the ways they don't, the Torah's varied maps of the Promised Land serve as instruction, as guidance, as Torah for us modern Jews. If you enjoyed this program, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. And discover JTS's other series by visiting jtsa.edu/podcasts. To learn with JTS faculty in live online classes, visit jtsa.edu/online. And you can get in touch with us by emailing onlinelearning@jtsa.edu. Thanks for listening.